Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show. I'm Andrew Slaven, and unlike Motherwell at throw-ins, I know what's going on. On the pod, we look ahead to a big midweek of Premiership action, which means we'll be looking forward to more poor sportsmanship, rescinded reds and aggravated assaults. And we'll be talking about the subject that has dominated Scottish football this week. Graham Shinney's brace, of course. Oh, and also the issue of sectarianism! Yeah, that's a bit heavy, but don't worry, it's not too heavy. Because later on, we'll be speaking to Clyde Hall of Famer Pat Nevin about his time with the Bully Wee and a wee bit of indie music as well. Joining me in the studio, he loves rock and roll, but not as much as a Scotch pie. From The Telegraph, it's JJ Bull.
And when they're combined, you get pie and rock.
And joining me as well from Copper 90, Laura Brannan. I heard a rumour you might be going to Kazakhstan. Are you going to make it?
Andrew, I live in London. I can't afford a plane to Kazakhstan.
Don't talk about London.
No, I would love to go, but unfortunately can't make it this time due to work commitments. But £1 a ticket for the qualifier, that is outstanding. I almost could go on a London wage based on £1 for tickets.
Why a pound? Just because nobody's going?
Nobody wants to go.
I mean, I'm guessing Kazakhstan is the cheapest country in the world to live in. I think once you get there, it's probably really, really cheap. It tends to be, you know, the more expensive the journey, the cheaper it is to actually when you're there and vice versa.
Two of my really good mates went to Kazakhstan last year. They had an absolute ball.
I would love to go. Absolutely love it. It's just, I'm so gutted the timing of this game, the away game. If it had been later in the year, I would have been there in a heartbeat. When we drew against them, that was the one I was most excited about, because I thought, when else am I going to get to go to Kazakhstan? Absolutely brilliant. But it's almost like, why are they even selling the tickets? The cost of posting them out to people probably costs more than they're actually making from the sales. Yeah.
Get them posted to Kazakhstan, pick them up. Lead us Celtic travel to Tynecastle on Wednesday night, aiming to make it... Went a bit Jim White there. Aiming to make it 10 wins in a row in the Premiership. The champions have a 100% record in 2019, but news from Dan Sath and a new managerial vacancy at Leicester has got people talking. Is Brendan Rodgers going to make it? Now, I did say a couple of weeks ago that this link was legit. So, do you think he would really leave Celtic?
The end of the season, yeah, I think he would, yeah.
Possible.
Yeah, I'd like it would happen now. I think the end of the season is much more realistic. He's got to get his statue first, hasn't he?
Yes. If he gets the treble.
I just see it as, like, he's pretty much done all he can at Celtic. He's not going to conquer Europe. We had this discussion last week. I don't think his recruitment's good enough to ever have that impact on the European stage. He has truly dominated Scottish football in every way possible. So where does he go from this? I don't think he's going to get one of the big four in England, so I think lower down the table in the Premier League is perfect for him.
Well, Leicester are sitting mid-table at the moment. They've got a lot of money to spend as well.
But good young team, but they need someone with a bit of... there's a thing with Leicester that they have a way of playing now, because they played a certain way when they won the... You know, everyone's got the West Ham way and all that. And I don't know if Brendan Rodgers plays the kind of way that they would... but outside of the top six in England, there's not really many bigger jobs that he'd get.
I mean, what he could do is say, I'm staying at Celtic next season. I've got a job. I've got a mission here. I'm going to continue that.
It would be wrong for him to say, I'm staying for next season at this stage in the year. I mean, anyone could come in. If you put your cards down as straightforward as that, that's quite dangerous. But what is his mission? What has he got left to achieve?
It's 10 in a row for most Celtic fans is the next big goal.
But is he going to stay there for two full more seasons?
I don't know. Ask Brendan.
I don't think I'd get an answer from him. He'd walk away
He'd
from
walk
me.
Away from you. Yeah, exactly. They beat Motherwell 4-1 on Sunday. One particular player was an absolute standout. Ewan Henderson, 18 years old, got his first start for Celtic. Are we likely to see him against Hearts, you reckon?
Well, he came in because of the injuries, first and foremost.
Yeah, so McGregor I'm not.
McGregor, Cham, Rodgick, and obviously Scott Brown was suspended. So depending, obviously, on who's available for the midweek game, that'll kind of wait and see. But he's very good. And I was a big fan of Liam Henderson, actually, when he was at Celtic coming through the youth youth ranks. I thought he had something special about him. And for him to come out himself and say, this is the better Henderson, I think there's a lot.
Himself. It's his brother.
Salim's his older brother.
And he's out in Serie B right now as well.
He's out in Italy. And for him to come out and say this is the better Henderson is quite something, because I was quite a fan of Liam at the time. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing what Ewan's got, the potential there.
He's highly thought of by the Football Manager scouting database as well. They think he's got a bit of talent and they tend to have a good hit rate.
And he got a wonderful assist for Edouard.
His movement's really good, yeah. Hearts could do with playing a lot better than they did on the weekend in this game. I've heard some people as well not being too happy with some of the approaches that Craig Levein has taken, but I'm not sure.
What sort of approach? What do you mean?
Well, that they're not really attacking with much creativity, I think, is the problem. And sometimes you get, we've talked about Naismith being amazing, and then in this game it just wasn't quite happening for him. Levein came out after the game and said, we didn't move the ball quick enough, play with enough intent, which frustrated our supporters. We got nervous ourselves, and then decision-making got cloudy. And it seems that playing at Tynecastle is a problem. They dropped points at home to Dundee and St Mirren this year. And there was Hearts rant on Twitter. I was pointing out 63% of teams in the league have taken something from Tynecastle. Is it the pressure of the home team that they're struggling with? Yes, the home crowd, I should say.
I've got it here as well. They've only scored 4 second-half goals at Tynecastle this season as well. So it's not as if they're attacking much in the second half either, really. It's just a bit... Is it a confidence issue then?
Well, they came out with that injury bit and they've got the defenders back now. They've got Ipiazu back and Naismith back. So they can do what they were doing early in the season. I think they just had a little bit of a stutter. I don't think it's anything to worry about too much. They're behind everyone else because they fell away, especially with injuries. Yeah. I mean, they're not quite as stable as, say, Aberdeen or Kilmarnock even. So where they are just now makes sense. I think they can still finish higher when they get back onto it. I mean, it takes time. The turnover of players has been massive. Tynecastle's quite demanding and they want a lot of stuff quite quickly, but it takes time to get it.
I mean, you've got a great atmosphere at Tynecastle, haven't you? You're saying they're demanding, and Celtic have struggled at Tynecastle in previous years.
But that's the thing, when you play smaller teams, it happens at loads of grounds. You see it at loads of teams that when you play a big team, the crowd's right up for it. And you can see it and it feeds into the players, you know, it's symbiotic and it comes up. But when you play someone like, I don't know, St Mirren, they're just not quite on the level, and then they start getting frustrated because you're not doing whatever.
Sure.
I mean, there's folk at Aberdeen who still think it's the 80s and think they should be winning 3-0 every single week, and they can't understand why they're not. It must be true for lots of teams when the fans are used to having seen stuff.
So did you see the pain etched on Clever Dicamona's face at full time?
Greg Tansey's space jail tackle.
Oh man, yeah. Which he only got a yellow for, right?
I mean, let's roll the dice.
Oh, yeah.
So the pain in his tweet as well. Can we take a minute here just to appreciate John McGinn's sense of humour? Because this is a former Hibs player having a wee dig.
Former St Mirren player as well.
Yeah, having a dig at a current Hearts player. Now, John McGinn is known for having a good sense of humour on Twitter, and he has a wee dig back saying, what was it he said?
Just said grass.
Yeah, just one word. Just grass.
And it's because Dicamona basically tweeted it directly to the SPFL as well, didn't he? So
yeah,
as in daub him in.
That's quite funny. Yeah.
I mean, it's great. And his reaction was brilliant, but of course Dicamona has to have a go back. Yeah. And it just becomes something, and it's like, come on. John McGinn just made the perfect response and he took it overly
I'm all for that. I love that bit of battle when it feeds into the real world, when Twitter and football, because they seem like they're far away, but they're actually real life. Oh, yeah. There's just real people sitting there.
When a player like John McGinn can come out with something, I think it's great. Yeah. I'd encourage that for more.
Tansy should get in trouble for that. He should have been sent off. It's another shocking referee decision. Clearly a red card. You could see it straight away. And he's very lucky not to have hurt Dicamona badly. I don't know if he's all right actually now, but I mean, his foot was so high, he either has no control over what he's doing or he knew what he was doing, and both are bad.
After defeat at Ibrox in the Scottish Cup last week, Kilmarnock manager Steve Clark spoke openly about the sectarian abuse he had suffered during the game. Clark said he thanks Chelsea for taking him away from the west of Scotland because his children and grandchildren don't understand what sectarianism is. Andrew Smith from The Scotsman joins us now. Andrew, you wrote about the issue of strict liability at clubs. Can you explain what that means?
Yes, that means that you take responsibility or liability, if you will, for the actions of your supporters, whether it's a home ground or an away ground, which it's different from how we how we can figure it in Scottish football, whereas it's like it's only you, you take responsibility for your own stadium rather than your supporters. So it's what strict liability, the way it should work in UEFA, it's not perfect, but there's a variety of infractions that if your supporters commit these infractions, then you are punishable, or there are potential sanctions that you take on board because of the actions of your supporters. Scottish football, or the Scottish football authorities, are incredibly resistant to this. I think they had a vote on it, was it 2 years ago, and yeah. I think it was 41 out of 42 clubs voted against it. So there's no appetite for it, but I think there is a growing momentum behind it because we're all fed up by the inertia that we see and the fact that nothing is changing. We're still hearing these chants. People talk about education and people talk about we're doing everything we can. This is a phrase you'll hear often. We're doing everything we can, because that is in the SPFL statutes. As long as clubs can be seen to have done everything they could, then they don't face any possible sanction.
So you're basically saying, you know, if any member club is caught with these offensive chants, that, you know, it's docked points potentially, or closed stands
potentially,
and stuff like
that. That would be the top end of the tariff. I mean, you can structure these. Let's face it. Look, Celtic, I think, is at 11 charges mm-hmm. brought against them, I think, in the last 6 years by UEFA, and they haven't been close to a game being voided or even a stand being closed. That's one of the higher end ones. So there are a variety of ways of doing this. I think that we have to give it more teeth. We have to take a lead, because we have a problem that no other country in the world does have. Maybe there was Serbia at one point, I think, with kind of in the Balkans, they had certain problems with religious kind of discrimination. But we have a particularly acute issue, and therefore I think we should be radical and we should take the lead. I mean, we've already done it in actually on-field behaviour. We were the first country in the world to introduce retrospective action for simulation, which is now something that's accepted, but no one else in the world had done it in world football before. That we introduced the if you con the referee, then you can face a too much suspension. So if we can be radical and we can be at the forefront of change on the field behaviour. Why can't we do off-the-field behaviour?
One of the things, this kind of devil's advocate, but one of the things put against liability is, a Rangers or Celtic fan could just pay some chump to go and sit in the stand and chuck coins at someone, or start, you know, they could send a group in to start these chants. That doesn't make sense, right? Is it something that you think
does,
that has evolved?
It does, but that's the kind of red herring that, if you, with the greatest respect, that Neil Doncaster throws up. But the reality is, the limited form of it that exists in England, and I have to say, they've never really used it as they could. I think, is it Millwall or in Scunthorpe or something? And I think there's a couple of cases that kind of petered out. But they define it as discriminatory mass chanting. Now, there's no way you're going to get 10,000 Celtic or Rangers supporters with buying tickets for the other team's game and then going along. And let's be honest about it. We don't have small groups of supporters chanting. We have thousands of people like indulging in these chants. And I think if you define it to clear examples of discriminatory mass chanting, then I think that would certainly kind of solve the potential issue that you have raised there.
Because obviously football is quite ingrained within society within Scotland, and this problem is historical and then becomes entrenched within historical matters passed down through families, and it comes from different pressure points within the country. But I mean, I'm from Aberdeenshire, and that I've never come across anything like sectarianism other than when Rangers and Celtic are involved. Do you think it's a problem, sectarianism, that is specific to the west of Scotland as opposed to the entire country?
Yeah, I think you've got pockets right throughout Scotland, but it tends to follow. I mean, some people don't even want to call it like sectarianism.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the group that exists. I think it's Call It Out. I don't know if you've heard of the group Call It Out.
I have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they talk about essentially like anti-Irish Catholicism, because sectarianism tends to follow where you've had Irish immigrants. Mm-hmm. There's no Catholic Irish immigrant population in Aberdeenshire. You have Dundee, and you have pockets of Edinburgh, and you have most of the Irish immigration in the late 1800s was to Glasgow. So therefore, you had a reaction to that. At one point, I think there was 148 anti-Catholic societies in Glasgow alone, you know, at that time. So this is where we're going back to. And then, obviously, Rangers, like, they didn't start off as a kind of anti-Catholic club, but that became ingrained within their kind of psyche when the kind of 20s and 30s, when you the shipyards, Harland and Wolff shipyards, like, they imported a lot of workers from Northern Ireland, Orangemen, essentially, like, which begins the Orange Order and all that entails. So, look, that's why it exists in the west of Scotland, because this is where you've had the immigration and this is where you've had the two cultures, whatever you want to say, or two religions, kind of bumping up against one another.
That's one of the things that I find so... it's so difficult to understand, because having not ever been part of it. And because... so I grew up in the mid-80s and early 90s. Rangers and Celtic were so widely supported because they were the team that tend to win. So a lot of people would support that team because it's passed down for the family or something. But folk with no association whatsoever with any of the troubles in Ireland or anything like that, or any Catholic background, would come through to it. And so it really is quite a big problem on the part of Rangers and Celtic specifically, because they have so many fans that follow it and they sort of buy in to the tribal part of the clubs, right?
No, I agree. And I mean, I think I once described it as a kind of religious franchise. They do tap into... they have got a religious franchise. There's so many things stitched into why people become Celtic and Rangers supporters. I mean, we live in a secular, largely secular society. I think the last census, I think there was fewer than half people said they'd any religion at all. So there is a certain tribal element to it that... But it's still manifesting itself. I mean, what really, after everything that happened last week, I found it utterly depressing that that Rangers support would sing their Steve Clark song again at Hamilton. I thought, that just tells us everything about how entrenched this is. And there is a certain defiance on the part of a section of Rangers support, and it's a considerable section, about their right to sing essentially anti-Catholic songs.
You're right in our day that journalists have pretty much given up writing about this, because what's the point? I mean, I've been a journalist in Scottish football. You're going week in, week out to games. What do you see? I mean, do you sit there in the press box and just hear it? And what's the kind of reaction like around you?
I was sitting after the Villarreal game where I thought it was really... which I wrote a colour piece, so I had it in that colour piece. I mean, I've been going to Ibrox as a journalist since Mo Johnson scored the winner for the first day at the Celtic View, but like he scored the winner for Rangers in 89. So and it was pretty bad then. But then I've also written about it's been a lot better. But I mean, you hear the Super Rangers, no one likes us, we don't care, we hate Celtic, Fenian Bees, you know, there's trigger songs that Up to Knees in Fenian Blood, and F the Pope and the Vatican, you know, and they were all back. They're all back. Both the ultras at Celtic and Rangers are retro. You know, they're almost, they wear their retro strips and they think they're retro supporters. I mean, Celtic supporters starting to sing like songs that I'd heard. I mean, I grew up a Celtic supporter and going to the jungle during the hunger strikes, the May's hunger strikes in the 80s and all that. And these songs had just died away, and they're all now part of the repertoire of the Green Brigade. They think they're catapulting themselves back to the 80s. I've written about it three times this year at Celtic games. The first game of the season, Kenny Miller got the sad orange bee thing, and I put it in and I said it was a depressing da-da-da, Celtic's flag day, da-da-da, to hear them singing Kenny Miller's sad orange bee, and I wrote dash, which is sectarian. But I mean, I got an email from that saying it's no, because you're talking about the Orange Order and that's not a sect. But we all know, when you use the word orange, you're using it as a shorthand for Protestant. When you use the word Fenian, you're using it as a shorthand for Catholic. And after the Derby, I wrote another whole piece. I just actually thought, I was sitting there and I thought, geez, I'm just going to get through this because this is poison and I feel kind of unclean being here. I got emails from both sides. You don't actually get as much feedback now. You used to get a lot of letters and all that, but it was Sunday morning, I woke up to people saying, you know, one of them was just Block Castles, this guy saying, if you don't like what you hear at football grounds, don't come. we don't want you. I mean, it's like a kind of strange way of saying that that's the solution. If you don't like it, don't be there. I said, did you say that about
I kind of
racial
feel like,
abuse or whatever?
Yeah, I kind of feel like some maybe journalists don't want to speak out maybe like on Twitter because of the backlash that they're going to get. I remember way back like when I used to work for Celtic and I went in very naive. I'd grown up without this sort of kind of culture, really. I'd never really been educated on this side of things. My dad's a Celtic fan and he'd never really kind of taught me about that side of stuff. So when I did go into the club and I did hear these songs on a regular basis, I didn't know what they meant. But then I would sometimes say on Twitter, and Twitter was quite new at the time, we're going back in the day here, but I would say something along the lines of, Why do you feel the need to sing about these topics and the abuse that you would get back? It just wasn't worth it.
Did you never hear any of that in school though, between like your peers and stuff like that? Like
there was
people in my school that, you know, a Rangers section and a Celtic section, and you'd hear it and sometimes they would say stupid things as well.
But then I think older people say, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
But then
I think that kind of ties into what you're saying is maybe they don't know any better. I mean, I don't know exactly the age groups, but I know maybe like guys in the Green Brigade are very young. I don't know if it's the same for the Blue Order.
Yeah. But I must say as well, like when I was growing up in the 80s, it was very political. You could understand why Celtic supporters were singing about the troubles, because it was a hot topic and we were living through it, and it was a really political age, and a lot of the supporters in the jungle or whatever, they identified with Ireland because they were first and second generation Irish. So it was a whole different, and I could understand that, and there still is a political element to it, but the political element then, as it existed, whether or not you agree with it, whether or not you agreed with United Ireland or whatever, what was happening there. I mean, you know, back in the, when I started going to Celtic back in the 70s, like there wasn't one Catholic, one vote in Ireland. People forget that, you know. I mean, we're getting into a whole political topic, but I'm just saying it's not all just about we hate Protestants or we hate Catholics. Although I have to say, I think Rangers is... the problem is, you get what about if I say, look, we're not talking about, you can't lump Celtic Rangers together. It's not quite the same thing. It's not quite the same thing. Celtic is a celebration of an Ireland or an Irish struggle that you might not like. And obviously there was innocent people killed and such like. Clearly there was the atrocities committed by the IRA, so we understand that. But it's a bit different to just saying, look, we're just going to sing songs about hating fiends. There are two different things at work here. But the equivocation you can make is if Celtic fans are singing, calling ex-Rangers players orange bees or whatever. You know, that is the equivocation with what happened to Steve Clark. What happened to Steve Clark? What happened to Chris Boyd? There's an equivocation there. There's a difference between being offensive and a hate crime. See, when you start talking of somebody's religion, their sexual orientation, their creed or their colour, you're guilty of a hate crime. Say you had a tariff, say a strict liability tariff, as I say, you start off with a warning and then you get a fine and then you might get a partial stand closure and then you might get a full stand closure and then you might get a penalty. Or as soon as you get to the partial stand closure or you ban away fans, you look at the away supports that Kilmarnock have had from Celtic Rangers. It's a long time since Kilmarnock have been attracting 12,000 supporters for league games. You look at that revenue they've had out of Celtic Rangers this year. Because even they're away crowds, I've given them two stands now. You look at Livingston giving Celtic Rangers three stands, that's £30 a pop, or £25 a pop or whatever. Even these clubs are happy to tolerate it because they're making poppy. It's coin. Like they don't want Celtic Rangers fans banned for their singing because they're filling their stadium.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Steve Clark now has to worry about the visit of Motherwell to Rugby Park. It's five games without a win in the Premiership for Killy after defeat to Livingston. It's the worst run of the season, so where's it all going wrong? Losing Greg Stewart, perhaps? Is it just that?
That was a big loss. I mean, what are you meant to do? He was the most creative player and one of the most creative players in the league.
Yeah.
So he's really high on progressive runs, progressive dribbles, as in he takes the ball forward. When he gets the ball, he does things with it. Mm-hmm. His first touch, oh mama! You've seen it. He just picks the ball out of the air. It's so nice to watch. But Rory McKenzie is playing. He played last season a lot. He got 25 games in the league. But it's been Stewart and Brophy have really been the players doing the damage. So now you've got Boyd's playing up front with Brophy, Jones on the left and McKenzie on the right. It's just not happening, but they've stumbled a wee bit, but they've had some tough games. I think they're going to be just fine. Kilmarnock will be all right. They'll get back into the swing of things again. But losing a player like Stewart, who was basically creating everything for them, it's the reason that Brophy was doing so well, because Stewart was helping create all the chances he's getting, because they're both high on expected goals and assists. We should talk about Daniel Backman's red card against Rangers. Yeah. That was a fun thing.
We had a bit of a exchanging of views, didn't we, JJ?
Yes, Laura. We'll remind everyone, in case you've forgotten what happened. So Daniel Backman was defending a corner, and he had
Glenn Kamara in front of him and Alan Power on the other side as well. So Glenn Kamara was in a Backman-Power sandwich.
That's right.
Yeah, Backman puts his arms up before the corner's kicked, moves his arms back, and in the process elbows Kamara in the face.
Forearms.
So now you've got to be clear with your wording. A lot of people think it's an elbow. I disagree with it being an elbow. I think,
so like you said,
it's more of his, it's his movement of his arm. Now, when you see the movement, originally the angle television was showing was behind the goal, and they were slowing it down, so it didn't look as severe. So when their analysis came, everyone was like, "Nah, it's not enough." Then fresh angles came out at full time, and they were running at full speed, and it looked like there was a bit more of a jerking motion, which looked a bit more dangerous, but I still don't believe that there's intent to harm. There's no reckless movement in there to harm Glenn Kamara, and it's not an elbow. So Backman is just trying to get advantage by getting in front of him because he's a goalkeeper.
So he's not trying to hurt him.
No.
What he's trying to do is get him away because he's annoying, and you're just to go away.
Yeah, so it's the normal tussle inside the penalty area.
He's been sly about it. Right, he's been sly. So he puts his hands up and he's like, "You can't see what I'm doing, but I'm doing what he did." Mm-hmm. And he puts his forearm and he just bashes it. And you know what you're doing.
This happens all the time at corners. Players are tussling with each other.
Not in the face. Yeah, the only thing. Yeah, I agree, but not in the face.
Yeah, I'm with you, Laura, as well. It's a very interesting case where you just have to... The referee hasn't seen it, and the assistant has actually, advised the referee to do it, and now it's been rescinded, which I think is a right decision.
And because he bashes him in the head, it should be a yellow card, I think, because he knows what he's doing and he's made contact with the face, but he's not trying to. It's not like brutal intent. He's not trying to murder him or anything on the pitch. Yeah. And I'm not sure brutal intent is one of the laws of the game, but it'd be pretty cool.
Brutality is in the wording.
Is it? Well, yeah. It's cool.
Yeah. Would a foreign referee got this better, guys?
Oh,
just to bring this
on
into it?
I would be up for it because they're higher quality than the ones we've got.
Of course you would.
Really?
Yeah, but Scottish referees are terrible. But
where would you get your referees from specifically? Brendan Rodgers says Wales and England, but I don't see any UEFA standard referees in Wales.
Anyone who fancies a trip, it's beautiful. Go to the Highlands.
So we're
going to
waste money
and the SFA pay for it. Yeah,
yeah, we're going to waste money on flying in these refs.
Or a trip in a hotel. I can afford that.
Yeah, or we could train up the referees.
I would pay referees trip and hotel to get someone like that rather than Andrew Dallas ever again.
Or you could sack Andrew Dallas because he's rubbish and then train the other ones to be better referees, and if it's possible, even make them full time.
We'll do that this weekend. So. But it's something you don't know.
They can't just turn to foreigners. I mean, who else does that?
But it's like getting a batch of good footballers through. You don't know. It takes so many things to bring them through and then get them to the right level and the right mentality and the right skill set to be able to do it. It's a hard job. I could never, ever do it. I feel really bad and we always slag off referees and that.
No, just accept, we're not good enough. Okay, the answer's elsewhere. No, the answer's right in front of you. Make it better.
It's like, how?
It's like when you're in a bad relationship. Is the answer, I'm going to dump this person and walk away, or am I going to make this relationship?
If they're beating you up,
I'm going to fix this relationship.
Oh my God.
Fix it. Stop walking away.
I don't want to get the inner workings of your relationships, Laura, on this podcast.
Yeah, but that's a very... I mean, that could lead us down a multiple door pathway. Because then
let's leave those.
Who knows that?
Homely analogies.
Ideally, it should be the refs in Scotland, no matter what country they're from. By the way, people from Scotland and within the Scottish FA should be doing the refereeing, but they should be good. And I don't care where they're from, as long as they get decisions right. If they can't do it now, they need VAR or something because it's. There was more refereeing stuff. The backroom stuff was funny. With VAR, they would be able to make the decision correct, get it right there.
For sure. Well, let's hope the referee has a good game at Kilmarnock Motherwell. So Motherwell's six-game winning run came to an end at Celtic Park, and their sportsmanship has been called into question after their goal against Celtic.
Great goal.
James Scott has basically been looked at as the culprit, but Aribi as well? Is he maybe?
Yeah, they're both at it. Yeah. They're just, I think they're young and naive. And they should know. Like, it's not...
It's an unwritten rule in football. So Ryan Christie went down injured, and so Celtic kicked the ball out, and then you give the ball back to the team who had the ball last.
There's an important bit here that you're missing. So Ryan Christie pulls up first, tries to carry on, pulls up a second time, right, accepts that his game's ended, walks off to then let Rodgers sort the sub out because his game's done. Rodgers then tells him, go back on and sit down, because he didn't want to play on with 10 men. So he wanted him to sit down and waste time by sitting down, which you don't have to stop play.
So you were at this game, yeah?
Yeah. So you can only stop... You only have to stop play if it's a head knock. It wasn't a head knock, it was a hamstring. So it was Rodgers being quite sly in the sense of, we don't want this game to continue with 10 men, so sit back down and wait. So then Celtic kicked the ball out to let the sub, like,
that
let
makes
him get
absolute sense.
Substitute,
I mean,
right?
That strategy makes absolute sense, yeah.
But that's sly, because he could
have just
walked
off. It's a game.
Yeah, but this is it. It's just a wee bit of gamesmanship here, right? Motherwell did exactly the same. It's gamesmanship.
No.
It's sly, and it's hilarious.
I thought it was funny too. But also, I think it's ungentlemanly conduct.
It's very ungentlemanly.
Of course,
playing at any level, you can't really do it.
But this, I don't get this whole, it's an unwritten rule. It's a rule or it's not a rule. And it's not set in stone. So they didn't break any rules. They didn't cheat. They just took advantage of a situation.
So are you okay with this happening to Motherwell? Is this an okay thing to happen?
Yes.
If a player is injured, forget the point that Brendan Rodgers is being sly by sending Christie back onto the pitch to lie down.
In the marginal world would do it, because the referee can stop the game. You don't have to, but you can.
So if the team with the ball, who are a man down through injury at that moment in time, to kick the ball out, the opposition are totally within their right to go ahead and try and score a goal. It doesn't matter about giving the ball back.
No, I think they are within their right. It's not a rule. I just think...
Is that not a bit...
I don't think there's any point arguing this, because it makes no sense.
Of course you can argue it's unsporting, okay, I get that, but I see more problems with being unsporting in the sense of diving, and people seem to think that's okay, and we're seeing it in the same game. I mean, Scott Sinclair went down and did his usual.
I don't think you compare the two things, though.
But they are, because one's... They're both classes unsporting. One's a lot more serious than the other.
Yeah, but this is more about someone getting treatment as soon as possible. So,
but he wasn't going to get treatment on the pitch though, because his game was over.
I take your point, but the wider issue is that no team should take advantage of another team's.
I've seen it before once, and it was in England, and I think Kanu took the ball on, not really realizing what was going on, because he maybe doesn't understand what's happening. Overmars scored the goal, and then Arsenal offered to replay the game.
Yeah, and did you see that Celtic wanted to...
Because that's just what you do within football.
Well, no, but did you see when they restarted the game, Celtic expected the opportunity to go and score?
Yeah, that's
been
That would have been
absolutely ridiculous if that had happened.
I've seen similar things happening all over the world.
That's insane.
Did it not happen like in the Championship or League One a few years ago?
Teams take advantage of situations. And I'm sorry, see, when you're within the lines and within the 90 minutes, if you show too much respect, you're going to lose the game.
I've experienced...
What is this?
Yeah.
Stop showing so much respect.
It's not showing respect.
That is showing too much respect.
It's just cricket. It's what you do.
And it's not a rule, though.
Stephen Robinson came out after and he says...
He said he was embarrassed.
He says embarrassed, yeah.
He said he didn't know what to do. He said he spoke to Brendan because as soon as it all happened, as soon as the throw-in happened, he was like, he wanted to make a decision. He wanted to tell his players something, probably. And I'd like to think, no, don't do that. But he even said himself, listen, Scott will learn from this. The only defence you can give to Motherwell is to Scott and say, it's funny, he takes the ball and he looks behind him almost to say, like, what he's doing. Like, come on, I'm on
it.
What
are you doing? He just thought he was an incredibly fast player.
Yeah, yeah.
What I think says a lot is at full time, everyone in the Celtic camp were so raging about this decision. They just won 4-1 and that was the only thing they were talking about.
Yeah, but
get over it.
But at that moment in time, Celtic were only 2-0 up and Motherwell were 2-1. Back in this game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That put Motherwell right back into the game.
It rattled them something awful. And up until kind of the last couple of minutes of the game, Motherwell were very, very capable of getting an equaliser, which would have been an even bigger story.
Aberdeen face Hamilton on Wednesday night. Unfortunately for Derek McInnes, this game is being played at Pittodrie, because away from home, the Dons have won 6 on the bounce and they have the best away record in the division. JJ, you must be a very happy man with their away form.
I think they've done very well. It's the best they've done away since, I can't remember the number now, I think it's like 1936 or something. It was a good win against St Johnstone, by the way. It took forever to break them down. Graham Shinney scored two excellent goals, brought about by Aberdeen just waiting to be able to counter them through the middle. Hamilton, on their game on the weekend, were absolutely useless. And I cannot believe, because they lost 5-0 to Rangers. I mean, it's not easy, but Brian Rice came out after the game and said it was a learning curve for him.
He's such a positive manager, and he tries to keep his team...
I know.
He tries to set them out positively, but maybe there are just... The thing is, like, he's been in the game a long time.
Most people listening to this will agree that you can't... If you're a Hamilton with the players they've got and the confidence levels they're at just now, you can't go and try and take the game to Rangers, even if you're at home. Yeah. Not for the whole game. You can maybe do it in spells. He opened them up from the very start, and sure enough, Rangers were scoring from 30 yards like every single time.
Yeah, you have to be clever with it. Obviously, you want your team, if they're the underdogs against the likes of Rangers, to go out and have a go. It's great, and it's great for the neutral to watch that kind of exciting approach, but you've got to be sensible about it. If you're such a significantly lesser team in terms of your squad, you have to basically park the bus sometimes.
Yeah, you can play the game, right?
Yeah,
you can choose
smartly.
Sections of the game, like first 10 minutes, then first 10,
yeah,
second 10.
It doesn't always have to be an attractive game. And the likes of, from an Aki's perspective, it's probably not going to be an attractive game if they're to take anything off Rangers. So you just have to kind of bite the bullet in this one and go, right, let's play ugly.
And so I wonder how they'll line up against Aberdeen, because I mean, I like what Rice is doing with Hamilton trying to make them play more attacking. It's way more fun to watch.
A bit more interesting.
It'd be way better in the Championship when they're there next season. When I mean, that's where they're going at this rate. Because Aberdeen, McInnes has always wanted to play on the counter-attack, and that is his dream, if Hamilton turn up to Pittodrie. That's if Aberdeen turn up themselves, because they've got a habit of when these teams they should beat turn up, and then just they don't themselves get there. But one player who will turn up and always does is Lewis Ferguson, who's been absolutely brilliant this season.
Yeah, signed a contract extension, so...
Yep, until the year 2024, which sounds like the future, but it's only 5 years!
Sounds like Futurama. But yeah, it's nuts.
That's just dawned on me now.
And
how
he'll still be older than Stevie Naismith.
Why aren't we on the moon yet?
Well,
God, 2024, that's so futuristic.
If you've got Ferguson signing a contract, how likely is Graham Shinney to sign a new contract? Two goals he scored against St Johnstone on Sunday, but his future is still in doubt.
There's a thing Aberdeen done this season called AberDNA, where you can sign up and you can pay a money per month, like £12 a month for a certain membership, and there's higher memberships at £18, something like that. And the money goes towards... It's a monthly subscription to your bank. The money goes straight to the club to invest into players and in the youth team and stuff like that. And they give you stuff in exchange, like they put your name on the wall or something. I'll give you exclusive tours around the stadium or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember. But great idea, because they need to be able to get extra revenue to be able to compete and push past that second place, or to keep it second place, stay in third, something like that. Graham Shinney is worth about £15,000 a week, and you can get it in England quite easily. I think he could play for one of the worst teams in the Premier League. Maybe he could definitely be Cardiff, for example.
Huddersfield.
I think he'd get a game with them. He'd be great for a counter-attacking team. One of those ones with one of those new age German, Austrian, super high pressing. Perfect. Leader, a great player, great mentality to have. Look how well Kenny McLean's doing now down at Norwich. So he could go there. But I don't think even if they rebranded AberDNA to Aberdeen Pay for Shinney, there's no way they're going to be able to afford 15k. I think he's been one of the best players I've ever seen play at Pittodrie.
Wow.
I think he's just fantastic, and it would be great if he stayed. I don't think anyone would really resent him leaving, because they would understand that going for more money would make absolute sense.
Well, he might get on the score sheet again, because he's up against Hamilton, who have the worst away record, least goals scored, and the most goals conceded in the league. Good luck, Hamilton. Time now to go around the grounds in the SPFL. Neil White has the best of the action from the Championship, League One and Two as well.
It was another rollercoaster ride in the Championship. Plot twists galore at both ends. Partick Thistle were 2-0 up against league-leading Ross County at half-time, while Dundee United were leading Falkirk by a single goal at the same point. That would have seen United level with Ross County at the top, going into a busy midweek card. But County hit four in the second half, and United conceded a late equaliser at Falkirk in games that had a big impact on the promotion and relegation issues. County are now 5 clear of both Dundee United and Ayr United, who lost 1-0 at home to Dunfermline. It's Ross County versus Ayr, first versus second, on Tuesday night. But let's focus on the bottom of the table. Thistle had been on a 7-game unbeaten run that had taken them clear of the relegation playoff place. But that second half collapse, Falkirk's draw, and a 93rd minute winner for Alloa at Queen of the South means the Jags are back in the basement, level on points with Falkirk, one behind Alloa, the league's only part-time team for whom a miraculous survival remains a possibility. Jordan Kirkpatrick, the midfielder whose injury-time goal in last season's playoff final got them into this division, did it again for Alloa, heading home at the death for their first win in Dumfries for 16 years, and that's Kirkpatrick's first goal since returning to Alloa from St Mirren in January. League One, and there was no change in the top half of the table as Arbroath's coronation tour of Scotland continued with another win, 3-2 over Airdrie, thanks to veteran striker Bobby Lynn's third hat-trick of the season, wins for Raith and Forfar below Arbroath. But the result of the day was Dumbarton's 4-3 victory at East Fife, who had Chris Kane sent off after the scoring. Dom Thomas scored a hat-trick for Jim Duffy's Dumbarton, who moved out of the relegation picture along with Stranraer, who won at Brechin to send them into the relegation playoff spot. In League 2, Clyde conceded a late equaliser for the second weekend in a row, this time at Queen's Park, and wins for Edinburgh City and Peterhead, who ground out a tough 1-0 at Stirling, have carved out a bit of space for these two, who have been slugging it out relentlessly for the title since the season began. Blair Henderson scored in Edinburgh City's regulation 2-0 win over Cadenbeath, and he is Scotland's top league goalscorer with 24. Peterhead play their game in hand at home to Cadenbeath on Tuesday, and they go top with a win.
As Neil just told you, Clyde lost ground on the leaders at the top of League 2 as they try to make their way back up the divisions and back to the glory days. I spoke to a Clyde Hall of Famer, the one and only Pat Nevin, about where it all began for him.
Before that, I'd been at Celtic and I'd been in S form at Celtic, and I thought a lot of people around there felt that I was a stick-on to be signed, and it didn't happen. They told me I wouldn't be good enough, I wouldn't be tall enough, and I agreed completely.
Too small?
Yeah.
Too small to play football.
And I'm thinking, was there not a wee guy called Jinky who played, you know, to which I didn't say that because I knew the correct answer to that was, yes, he was better than you. But I agreed because I'd never really wanted to be a footballer. I just liked playing. Love playing. It wasn't the idea to be a professional. Just loved the actual playing. So there was no need for that. And the rest of my family, brothers and sisters, all gone to do degrees. And that's where I was going. So that's exactly what I did. Kicking about with Gart Kosh Boys Club, had to play a friendly. We were asked to play a friendly against what we thought was Clyde Reserves at Sheffield. And me and my mate had a bet beforehand, and the bet was an album. Who could beat the most players and score? We did that sort of thing all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was centre midfield that day, and I must have taken around four and scored. And I was walking off, and Craig Brown, their manager, was walking over and he goes, would you like to come and play for us? And I went, to be honest, no, I'm kind of happy at Boys Club, and I'm studying, I'm doing a degree, and that was in the days of grants. And fortunately, Craig Brown, being an educationalist himself, said, well, it's only two nights a week and a game on a Saturday, and we'll pay you. And I said, oh, let me think about it. Yeah. And that was it, you know. And I was, you know, it took me a wee while. I was fuming, actually, because I thought I should be in the first team right away. And he held me back for like a few months.
Why do you think he held you back?
I don't know. It was like, I really don't know. We were playing okay that season anyway, and we kind of won the league that season. But when they let me go, I was flying. I was like, and I just flew off. I mean, I got on and I got some substitute appearances, but I was kind of wanting to start. And it just went well really, really, really quickly. And it fitted well because I love Glasgow. I was doing a degree. I was really happy. I was going to gigs, you know. I was playing football, getting a couple of quid extra. Students, we always liked that. So it was just I was living a perfect life. And on top of it, at the same time, Craig got me into the Scottish Youth setup. And, you know, I've under 18s there, and it's kind of right. It's all Celtic and Rangers boys, and like, what's this guy for Clyde doing, you know, three divisions down? But fortunately, we won the Euros. I get player of the tournament. So I I think it would have been difficult to say I was getting special treatment. So it was great.
What were you studying? What was your...
BA Commerce, so it was economics, accounts, business studies, management, a bit of law. So it was a kind of wide business kind of course. It wasn't something I was particularly interested in, but every single part of that course has helped me in my career, which is astonishing. So, and we had a great bunch of sort of teammates around us. I really liked the guy, the Clyde team. My dad could come and see me every week. I was just living the perfect life.
It was a good time at Clyde because there was a lot of young, exciting players coming through at the time as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, we all came for Gart Kosh. We all came for that same team. There was a guy called Stevie Evans who went on and had a good career. Tommy McQueen went on and played for Aberdeen, left back for quite a long time. And we all kind of came in at exactly the same time. And there was Paul Flexney going, he played Scottish Youth and all the rest of it. So there was a bunch of us that were good, but there was a good bunch of experienced pros as well. So it was a good place to learn a number of things. And of course, the lower reaches of Scottish football, you learned quick. You know, you're going to get lumped all over the place, but kind of I'd been used to that anyway. The best thing about it is I was allowed to play my own position. And that never really happened much for the rest of my career. You know, when I left Clyde, I had to move and play a different position. And it kind of grated.
And was that Craig Brown himself?
He got me and he just said, we need to see me. I'd been a 10 or a certain midfield. So, or more often than not, striker. So, and then he said, look, play wide, but look, do what you like. Mm-hmm. So I had this kind of complete freedom because he knew I would defend as well. And he knew I was a distance runner. So he kind of got me really quite quickly. Whereas other managers maybe wouldn't have, you know, with the way I was looking at post-punk kind of look. The other players didn't look like that.
So you were Division 2 Player of the Year as well, and you got the attention of Chelsea. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of history with this transfer, was there?
Yeah, no, there was lots of history. Yeah. They came in to buy me, and obviously Clyde could do with the money, and I said, well, no, I'm not interested. I'm doing a degree, I'm happy. Why would I ruin my happiness? And they were like, no, you're not getting it. We want you to be a professional footballer. And I said, well, you're not getting it. There's some things that are more important in life. So I did turn it down for a year. They come back the next year, and it was purely, it was complicated. I'll try and make it very simple. I was sitting final year exams, 6 of them. If I failed one of them, that was me out. However, you could set resets, but I was going to miss all of the exams because I was going to Mexico with Scotland Youth. Mm-hmm. So I had to pass all the resets or I was out. So I just made this completely logical decision. I'll sign for Chelsea for 2 years, go to Mexico, come back, join Chelsea, do my resets. You know, if I pass all 6 of them, I can always say to Chelsea, nah, I changed my mind and go back home. I went down to Chelsea, signed, went over to Mexico. We got to the quarter semi-finals, and passed all the exams, obviously. And then thought, oh, no, I'll just have a go at it. At Chelsea, and it was brilliant. You know, I had a choice between Chelsea and the Dundee United at that time. So, knowing my personality and having met up with Jim McLean, I just thought, I just don't know if it's going to really work. That and Jim's great. Jim's fantastic. But just the wrong personalities for each other.
You must look back on your Clyde career with a lot of fond memories because, you know, being inducted into the Hall of Fame there in 2011, like you must really have a strong place in your heart for Clyde.
When you think about it, you know, nearly 2 years there, you know, as I've said to you, you can tell, just pure happiness. Mm-hmm. We win a league, I get Divisional Player of the Year, I get Scottish Young Player of the Year, I win European Player of the Year for the under-18s, I play the tournament when we won the tournament. You know, this was a piece of cake and it was fun. And it was, so not a negative thing to be inducted into the Hall of Fame after only playing a couple of years. You know, that was kind of, I was really honoured by it. But I'm thinking, God, the guys that played, you know, 10, 15 years. But it was, I think what they understood is, what I understood is, I always, always, always was positive about Clyde. And to this day, if I'm asked to do a best 11 of players I've ever played with, there's always a Clyde player in that list.
Well, just quickly, my co-host JJ wants to know, when are you DJing next in London?
I DJ quite a lot in London. shall we own up to the listeners? We are in London just now. That's the only place you can catch me. I work almost, not in London, but I'm solely down south now. And I'm fortunate. I've got a great job. I'm doing Liverpool, Everton. Coming up, I've got a lot of great Chelsea games. I'm awful over doing PSG and Man United. So, I mean, I'm not complaining, you know. I miss seeing a bit of Scottish football as much as I used to do up until quite recently. But when I'm down here, I often get asked to do some DJing. So if it fits in with the work I'm doing here, I could DJ every week if I've asked
well,
to go along.
Let us know and we'll come along.
I'll be honest with you. I've done a lot recently. And what I'm trying to do is kind of hold off a wee while. And
you need to give yourself some time so the fans can look forward to the next big one.
I don't know about the next big one, but I want to do different stuff.
Okay.
You know, because it's kind of the stuff that I play, I've got a wide taste in music, but the stuff that I would generally play is like kind of an indie kind of influence thing. Whereas, you know, if I'm playing up, I also want to do new stuff and I want to push the challenge and push the barrier a little bit. It's getting a wee bit like most people just want to hear the big old hits, the big old indie hits. And, you know, I'm saying I've had enough of it, but I'd like to push it a bit.
Best tune that's brought the house down, just quickly.
Do you know recently? Weird one. If you get a chance, Belle and Sebastian, Boy with the Arab Strap.
Great.
But
band.
Choral version by a choir from Canada. Try it, it's brilliant.
Elsewhere in the Premiership, Rangers will be hoping they can claw back some ground on Celtic as they welcome Dundee to Ibrox. Alfredo Morelos will be back from suspension. Rangers won 5-0 at Hamilton. What did Steven Gerrard learn from that game?
Well, five different goal scorers. I think that kind of puts to bed, at least for this week only, that they're a one-man team.
Yeah, they're not a one-man team anymore.
Certainly not when they shoot from 25 yards.
I just wanted to bring up Glenn Kamara, who obviously comes up against his old club, but he looked really good against Kilmarnock last week and he just floated through this game. He seems like he's kind of relishing his time at Rangers already. It seems like it's the kind of club where he can play the game he wants to play.
These kind of players are better with when they're amongst better players.
Yeah, I think this is maybe what Rangers hoped Koulibaly would be, and they've now got Kamara instead.
Well, they've got options now, I think. So you've got Kamara who can, you know, slick passes forward.
Yeah, because movement, pass move.
Koulibaly is a bit more of an engine, and I don't think he's been a huge hit with Rangers fans this season.
And I think he's also making others bounce off him as well in a good way, in a positive way, because likes of Jack, I think he makes Jack a better player.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see what impact he's having on his own teammates as well as the actual game and the opposition themselves.
So Dundee were beaten 4-2 by Hibs on Friday night, and I felt really bad for Dundee because the two goals that they scored were quality. Scott Wright, just although there is a little controversial moment in this game where he seemed to knee, I can't remember the Hibs player, in the head, it's a little bit naughty, but massively influential in the two Dundee goals. He's the one who provides the cross for the first goal, which Paul McGowan, nobody's spoken about the finish from
McGowan's
Paul McGowan.
The finish is unbelievable.
The finish is so good and nobody's mentioned it.
I was going, whoa!
He just kind of caresses it with his
right foot. It's across from the left and he hits it with his right foot across it like he flicks it out the way.
And what Scott Wright...
Like when Chun Li does that spinning move in Street Fighter 2.
What I've noticed is what Scott Wright does really well is that he attracts a lot of players, and what he's done is he's kept the ball quite close to his feet and he attracts Paul Hanlon, the centre half, to kind of go out of position, which creates the space for Paul McGowan, and he just lofts it really nice. It's such a good goal.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about it.
Dundee are fighting back here.
They've got a bit of something about them now.
They've done so well under Jim McIntyre. He's really changing things around, and okay, so they've lost this one, but it just shows the kind of heart they've got there.
Mm-hmm. I think Dundee have just got a bit more of a threat about them with Scott Wright around, but they are...
But opening them up means they're vulnerable to the counter-attacks, and it's not that Hibs were countering them all game long, but they were very quick in the final third, and that's when, like, Malin's goal, you know, it just comes out of nowhere. He just shoots from distance and gets that. McNulty just follows up, a shot gets punted at the keeper, and it falls to his feet and is able to score. And I don't know if it's... I've not studied it enough to know if it's the Dundee players not tracking their men, they're not going man-to-man, and they're trying to do zone a lot of the time. And I don't know whether it's that they're just not good enough.
Kasunga was a bit soft for Flo Canberry's goal. And then
you tell him that in person.
Yeah, I won't. I'm going to stay well away. I'm sure he's a lovely man. Speaking of Hibs, they travelled to McDermott Park to face St Johnstone. Two wins out of two for Paul Heckenbottom. And both those games against Hamilton Dundee. So you kind of expect those results, to be fair.
It's a good time to change a manager, I suppose.
Yeah, so three goals in two games for Mark McNulty. Should we talk about him? Quite a good
good person to come in after.
Yes, he came in January, didn't he?
Yes.
He's made quite an impact straight away.
So he was at Hibs as a youth player and then went down south.
He had quite a long time at Libby, didn't he? Let me check. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get my stats up.
Well, Neil Lennon was on the BT Sport thingy, Majig, the
BT
show.
The score.
Yeah. And he was talking him up, McNulty, saying he was a very good player and expected him to do well.
Mm-hmm. Well, he had earmarked him.
Well, yeah, obviously.
All the people that came in were all Neil Lennon's people. But Flo Canberry just seems to be much more confident now. Seems like he's quite happy Neil Lennon's gone. He's not getting as much stick.
To be fair, I think I'd manage to score against Dundee or Hamilton. I don't think that for
Let's
a second,
put him
really.
To the chest.
Do you want to fight Kasunga?
No, but.
Are you saying you're better than Flo Canberry?
Absolutely not. Canberry's a really good player. I don't know what's happening with him and Lennon, what was going on there, but it seemed to be an attitude problem. St Johnstone's a hard team to play against, so this would be a good one to watch, actually, because St Johnstone tend to sit not deep, but they like to just wait for the other team to do something and then they want to hit them and they keep that goal and they go from there and try and get a second. But they're struggling to score, that's just now, and Hibs will come in with a bit more confidence after that two wins, and they've scored scored goals in the last two games. So Heckenbottom has to, how much does he know about these teams? How much scouting has he done? I'd love to know what his scouting network's like, what his preparation's going to be.
I don't know, but I think this game's important in the race for finishing top six, if anything else.
Oh, it's massive.
And St Johnstone, they're on a winless run of six. Mm-hmm. They've got a good chance to pick up some points because they've now played Aberdeen, Hearts, Rangers and Celtic. They've got the opportunity to push now. And Hibernian's
the perfect
place
to start.
And they
weren't bad in any of those games, really.
Like, yeah, I mean, look at their fixtures. They've had Aberdeen, Hearts, Rangers, Celtic twice. I mean, they drew Rangers.
Yeah.
And then you look at the fixtures they've got now until the split. Hibs, Livy, St Mirren, Motherwell, Dundee and Kelly. Mm-hmm. All winnable games. If I was a St Johnstone fan looking at that, I'd be very happy with the running.
There's one Premiership game that won't be taking place midweek. That's St Mirren versus Livingston on Saturday. Livingston winning for the first time in 9 matches against Kilmarnock at the weekend. I mean, what a weight off of Gary Holt's shoulders.
Livy, as we said a few times now, I've sort of balanced out. They'll win some, they'll lose some. I don't think they'll make it in the top six. I don't like predicting stuff, though, but...
Anyway.
I've just done it again. why do I do this? Tough one to call. I mean, other than the fact that St Mirren are bad at defending set pieces, Livingston are good at scoring set pieces, I think it could be a very ticked game. Hard to call. I quite like these games where you have no idea.
That's it from us. We'll be back on Monday after Scottish Cup quarter-final weekend and a fixture that so far this season has given us 10 goals and 5 red cards. Aberdeen v Rangers. Can't wait.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.